Next Step number 649, November 12th, 2020.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vodskin. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vodskin's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
And those who passed by blasphemed him, wagging their heads and saying, "Look, you who destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself and come down from that cross." Likewise, the chief priests also mocking among themselves with the scribes, saying, "He saved others, himself he cannot save. Let the Christ, the King of Israel, descend now from the cross, that we may see and believe." Even those who were crucified with him reviled him. Now when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness all over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," which is translated, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Some of those who stood by, when they heard that, said, "Look, he is calling for Elijah." Then someone ran and filled a sponge full of sour wine, put it on a reed, and offered it to him to drink, saying, "Let him alone. Let us see if Elijah will come to take him down." And Jesus cried out with a loud voice and breathed his last. Then the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. So when the centurion who stood opposite him saw that, he cried out like this and breathed his last. He said, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." There were also women looking on from afar. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James the Lesser and of Joses, and Salome, who also followed him and ministered to him, and when he was in Galilee, and many other women who came up with him to Jerusalem. Now when evening had come, because it was the preparation day, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, a prominent council member, who was himself waiting for the kingdom of God, coming and taking courage, went in to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Pilate marveled that he was already dead and summoned the centurion. He asked him if he has been dead for some time. So when he found out from the centurion, he granted the body to Joseph. Then he bought fine linen, took him down, wrapped him in the linen, and he laid him in a tomb which had been hewed out of the rock, and rolled a stone against the door of the tomb. And Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of Joses observed where he was laid. The story of the crucifixion according to St. Mark, the Gospel of St. Mark. What if the Gospel ended right there? What if that was it? That was the period. They laid him in a tomb. It was over. Yeah. What if the gospel message ended at that point? You know, last Monday, the war in Artsakh ended. And in many ways, we find ourselves today those of us who have been engaged in this war, and as you know, for the last several weeks, I've been sharing with you, our listeners, my personal feelings. Those of us who have been engaged in it, imagine if we were to look at the story and put a period on it today. The war ended, and it wasn't to our liking. There were millions of people throughout the world praying for it, praying for an end. They got it. There were those who were praying for a victory. We didn't get the victory. Or so we think, right? It's exactly like standing at the foot of the cross and looking up and seeing your Lord and Savior. Seeing your friend, your best friend who you've known for 3 years. Seeing someone who you respected so much being put up there. Seeing our country, seeing Armenia, the first Christian nation, being mocked by people who weren't even around, 100 years ago, being mocked, being laughed at, being told that you have no life up there. In fact, here's a sponge filled with old wine, vinegar. Drink it if you want it. This is it. This is what we're going to offer you. And the war ended on Monday. And in many ways, we are just like the apostles. Confused, frustrated, upset. We're looking and we're seeing that this is not the way it should turn out. This is not a good story. This is not what God promised us. This is not what befits the people of God. In many ways, the apostles thought, wait, Jesus, wait, the Son of God? And this is how it ends? This is the period? I mean, isn't there more to the story? If you had seen the crucifixion and knew nothing else beyond that, how depressing. How depressing. It's a total failure. In many ways, that's what we're in right now. We are in a total failure and depressed, upset, because we don't have the vantage point of looking out beyond and to see the possibilities that might be there. Or maybe we do. That's where faith comes in. That's where faith comes in for all of life. Life itself is depressing. Life itself is hard. And for those who don't have a faith, you know how difficult this is? For me, I want to believe that there's something good. In fact, I go to church every Sunday and I repeat the words, "This is life, this is hope, and this is resurrection." Sayagyank Huis Harutyun. We present the Holy Eucharist saying these words. Now, in some of the different versions, and it's a very unique little catch that not everybody catches because it's in classical Armenian, but it comes out Sayagyank Huis Harutyun. Instead of Harutyun. Well, what's that difference mean? Well, it's a big difference, although it's the same for me. And so I'm very comfortable in expressing this is life, this is hope, this is resurrection. But there are others who will argue that we do not have that resurrection, and they say it is the hope of resurrection. Not this is hope, but this is hope of resurrection. Fine. The resurrection gives you hope, right? For me, this is life. This is hope. This is resurrection. That's what Jesus Christ gives us. But I say this because this is the basic tenet of our faith. And without that resurrection, hope goes out the door. today we are in a world where we are struggling with these ideas of good losing out. And we're not patient enough to look a little bit beyond. 1915, the Armenian people faced a genocide. 1918, we saw with Sardarabad the beginning of a new independent Armenia. 3 years later, it went down into Soviet regime. Dark cloud for 70 years, and then it stood up again as an independent state. And there's many, 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 many ways of looking at the politics of it. That's not what I'm talking about today. I'm talking about that basic feeling that you have, that can good win despite all the ugliness in the world? It's a question that we throw out every single day. We had elections here in the United States, and the president, Trump, lost the election, and unfortunately his personality is such that he doesn't want to admit that. And so we're seeing a lot of struggle and people saying, well, Biden won the election, why isn't Trump giving up? And there's others who say, well, Biden didn't win because, now listen to this, because the president said that he didn't win. Because up until right now, that's the only proof they have, is that that's the only argument they have, because the president said, no, he didn't win. And we struggle with this. We struggle with this. In fact, much of what we see in Armenia, this war, was caused because of the general atmosphere that was created by the Trump administration. Basically, the bullying, basically the untruths that are spoken. And you see this. You see this with what Turkey did. Erdogan, what he did. What Aliyev did. Interview after interview after interview. Aliyev sits there and he spews out lies. Lies that you get, he gets caught on. But what happens is that if you catch him on something, you say, well, wait a minute, this is what was said. No, fake news. That's the catch-all, isn't it? Just throw it out and it's fake news. If somebody defends the point that you don't agree with, it's fake news. This is a very sad and sick situation we're in today. There was a time, believe it or not, you could be a Republican, you could have a friend who's a Democrat. Yeah, really, seriously. Like a few years ago, you could be a Democrat, you could have a friend that's Republican. I mean, this is how I've lived all my life, okay? These are political beliefs, political principles. You don't break friendships for them. In fact, Joe Biden, the president-elect, good friends with Mitch McConnell. Yeah, the Senate. Republican, Democrat. I mean, this is what democracy is about, is the dialogue, the exchange of information. Never heard of this where you break friendships. In fact, I know families that have broken up over this. I know people that have stopped going to church. Yeah. Because of the people that are there, one way or the other. What was Ruth Ginsburg was friends with Scalia, right? I mean, two justices of the Supreme Court, one a conservative, one a liberal. They talked. They exchanged ideas. They were friends. Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. It's ideas. It's what you believe. The way you see life, how it unfolds. One has a liberal understanding, quote unquote. The other has a conservative understanding, quote unquote. It's interesting. I use those quotes because if you look at people like Abraham Lincoln, you know, if you do some reading, you realize that he was a Republican. He came from the Whig Party. He was a Republican. And his platform was about big business, big government, expanding the government. something that today's Republican Party doesn't want, something that the Democrats do want. Well, how did it evolve there? It evolved because there was exchange of ideas, exchange of thoughts, and this is how you do it. And so what's happening now, there's a general intolerance in the world. And what we're seeing in Armenia, yes, exactly because of this atmosphere that's being created, where someone like an Erdogan could get up and to spew out hatred towards Armenians, where he could talk about genocidal ideas, where he could even get up and say, Jerusalem is ours. Why? Because there's the expansion of the Turkish, or what used to be the Ottoman Empire. Yeah. And people will overlook it because nationalism. No, nationalism has its place. There's all for national feelings of goodness, of even pride, but not in the sense that it is better than any other. And that's what's happened. That's what's happened. Mine is better than yours. My government is better than yours. My country is better than yours. My religion is better than yours. My political beliefs are better than yours. And once we get into that, there's no winning. There's no winning, because you realize that the other side has the equal right to say the same thing. And what happens? It ends up in war. It ends up in war. And we saw a very tragic, tragic situation come to pass in the last 45 days. And it ended with a very big tragedy of that sacred land. Sacred! Artsakh, sacred land, is now being tossed and turned around these political entities. You know what I have for you today? I just wanted to make these comments because we've been talking a lot about it last few days. I've been working with many, many different groups, and I've been dealing with many individuals who've been sharing with me their inner frustration, their inner confusion with what's going on. A lot of counseling, a lot of talking. And I think the hardest part for me is that I'm hurting too. Yeah. We're all hurting. Because you see little kids that have died. That's who was on the front line, little kids. And then we saw what evolved afterwards. People rushing the parliament building in Armenia, tearing up things. And then we see the president of Artsakh saying that, hey, if you want to blame somebody, blame yourselves. We saw what you did. You went in there. You're all able-bodied men. Why weren't you out there fighting on the front line? Then we heard about analysis of the war, and we said we were dealing with 20th century weaponry while the Turks were financing and bringing in 21st century weaponry. And when you think about it for a moment, you've got these Armenians, small little nation, small little army, with on the front line these young kids on the front line, fighting against not only Azerbaijan, one of the huge armies, the Turkish army, one of the hugest armies in NATO, the mercenaries brought in, and they, you know, you give them a few bucks, they'll kill who you tell them to. And Israel supplying the weapons. Wow! All of these powers against this little power. And so, yeah, it was like the world power coming down on Jesus. And we're at that point. We're at that Good Friday moment where we're looking and we're saying, this isn't good. There's nothing good about this. And then we realize that the name Good Friday was given to it. When? After they realized there was a resurrection. And we now are in that state between now and the resurrection. There is that hope. That resurrection is there. I guarantee it. It's going to be there. Because that's what the power of God is all about. Now, there is a lot going on about the power of God, which I've shared with you through these broadcasts, and I will continue getting into it. The power of God in the sense of people praying and thinking he was going to come out of the clouds and sort of just like destroy the Turks. And yeah, that's wishful thinking. It's very nice. You know, he didn't even do that when his son was on the cross. Yet he had the pain, he had the suffering of knowing that humanity had rejected this beautiful thing. And that's the pain and suffering that we're feeling too. That here is a treasure. Armenia is a treasure in that Middle East. I always think to myself, you know, if Armenia was anything else, if it was Israel, and you had, you found those treasures, such as Gerard, such as Garahunj, such as Etchmiadzin itself, the other monasteries, Sarmosavank. If Armenia was any other country, you would have Discovery Channel, you'd have National Geographic begging you to get in there, refusing to let anybody bomb it because these are sacred places. But we're Armenia. Small. And that's the frustration. And I've shared with you feelings of what we need to do. And I still go on record. The answer is in his shoes system. In other words, once we start seeing beyond ourselves and understand ourselves as global citizens rather than just Armenian citizens, when we start seeing that we have to be cognizant of what everyone else is doing, for us to find that recognition, then we start understanding we have to walk in the shoes of others to expect others to walk in our shoes. But that is a long story. We are what? Today is 649 episodes of The Next Step. It's the basic premise of what we started this ministry off with. Walking in the shoes. And if you haven't seen that, you need to check out some of the old footage. But we will talk more about that. For today, I'm going to stop right here. Because we are all exhausted. And we all need to find some strength. What I'm going to do is I'm going to play for you an incredible interview that took place on Horizon Armenian TV with a man named Chuck Holton, who happens to be a war correspondent. He went to Artsakh, I believe, because of CBN, Christian Broadcast Network. And he's back, and there was a very fascinating, eye-opening interview, which I want to share with you. I'll do that after the song. And then I want to share with you what's been going on, because we've had some beautiful prayer services. And I'm going to share those toward the end, so you kind of have something to put this all together with. So right now I'm going to play for you a song. This is by Janice Ian. And I picked this song because, you know, here in America and the way I grew up, there was a lot of anti-war sentiment that we grew up with. Anti-war in the sense that, you know, there's a difference. Here in America, it's not our sacred land like Armenia is. It's a place where we came, America. There was Native Americans who lived here, and they took it over. And again, walking in the shoes of others. This is why we went out to be with the Lakota tribe out in North Dakota a few years ago. It's because we understand that these lands were sacred and were taken away, much like Artsakh was taken away from us these last few days. Janice Ian was among those people, a folk singer, who spoke out against the war, along with many of the other folk singers of the time between the 60s and the 70s. I picked this song because she starts it off when the war was over. It's called Dance With Me.
And when the war was over, I went dancing in the street with the corpse of my dead brother to the sacrificial beat. Then the Boy Scouts and the Legionnaires came home from overseas, singing glory, hallelujah, to the swank Gestapo beat. Hallelujah, hallelujah, I never see plan in the president's mansion high up in the sky. And it called for a sacrifice, and my brother paid the price. Sent him home in a bag, the American flag was draped around the box, and the coffin, it was locked, and the note said thanks a lot. Come and dance with me, come and dance with me, I'm home from overseas. I'm a corpse up to my knees, celebrate the victory. Do you wanna dance and hold me tight? I'm feeling most diseased, and I need your company. Come and dance, come and dance. Celebrate the victory. Would you like to dance and hold me tight? I'm feeling most diseased, but I'm easier to please. Come and dance, come and dance.
Janice Ian doing Come Dance With Me. Janice Ian, a folk singer from late 60s, early 70s, a genre of folk songs that were against the war, against violence, against intolerance, against might over good. And there was a whole genre of these songs, as well as folk singers, who rebelled and protested against war. In particular, there was a war in Vietnam. Very similar to Artsakh in that the people, small group of people, up against a huge power, a superpower, the United States. And, you know, it's what I was saying a few minutes ago. My system of life, my system of government is better than yours. I will make you understand that. And you go to war. And, you know, there's all kinds of reasons why people go to war, all kinds of reasons why people protest it. And this is part of the struggle that we have. For me, I come out of that generation where it was a protest and the understanding of war. And quite different from Armenia. Armenia in the sense that there's a history, the land itself is filled with blood. So it's a trade-off, and you've got to come to terms. I play this song because we need to talk. We need to have a dialogue. We need to understand these feelings that we have. During the last couple weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, the number of emails, of comments, of calls I've been receiving, people are struggling with the idea. What do you mean we're Christian and we are fighting people? And yet you understand that, no, I cannot let this just go. I cannot just say no. When there is an evil, a manifest evil, materialized evil coming in and taking over churches, taking over people, you realize that you have to fight. And so it's a struggle. It's a struggle that we all have. And it's a struggle we deal with. That's why I wanted to play this for you today. In many senses, what we see in Avarayad, yes, Vietnam, these were small little groups. Avarayad is the quintessential story of the moral victory. We lose physically, but morally we are alive. And take it one more step. Who decides who the winner is? Well, it's in our hands today, isn't it? It's in our hands. If I wipe my hands clean and I hang my hat and I say I'm done with it, well, then they've won. Or I stay engaged. And this is the kind of dialogue we need, not argument, but dialogue, because somebody can come in and say, you know, there are different ways of managing that kind of intolerance in someone else, but it escalates to a point where there is no dialogue, and then it gets into wars. And this is what we're dealing with right now. I wanted to play this for you, just to give you a chance to think beyond the conversation that we're having right now, that protest was also a part of this, protest against the war. But would you be able to protest this war? I certainly couldn't, because this was a war where we were forced into it. We were forced. Our hand was forced, as was the result of the war, the end of the war. I leave you with that much. I'm going to come back with a beautiful interview with a man who went to Artsakh. This was called Come Dance With Me by Janice Ian off of the Stars album. I will put a link on today's show notes to her music. Of all the different media stories that have been coming to us from Artsakh, the most memorable for me was the ones that came from a dear friend of mine, one of my students, in fact, Ryan Ezra Telalian. And his stories were documented with pictures. I just heard from him today. He's returned from Artsakh, and I'm so happy, relieved to hear his voice. I did speak with him, and hopefully I'm going to have an opportunity to share some of his thoughts with you, our listeners, next week. This week, what I'd like to share with you is a small piece that came out. It was produced on Horizon Armenian Television. This is an interview with Chuck Holton. He is a war correspondent, and he was sent to Artsakh. I believe it was for CBN News, but I'm not sure, because he shows a clip in there. But he was speaking on Horizon. And the interviewer is Dr. Maria Cosette. And he speaks about being in Artsakh, what happened, what he does. He speaks about the politics, too. I'm going to cut it off at that point, too. And we'll definitely put a link on today's show notes so you can listen to the entire interview. But let's just take this little segment right now. And this is, again, Chuck Colton, war correspondent in Artsakh.
Welcome, Chuck. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
So what are your views when comparing the war in Artsakh with other wars?
That's a very good question. When we take other wars, every war is a little bit different. It has its own flavor. You take the war in Syria, for example, right now, much more large scale, millions of people displaced. But a lot of the same kind of brutality, because the enemy is the same. The Turks and the Free Syrian Army, which are former ISIS fighters, are now engaged in Artsakh. And so the tactics and the techniques are very similar. Lots of bombing of civilians, lots of brutality when civilians are confronted by these forces. And But I would say, you know, you look at a conflict like, Marawi in the Philippines, for example, much more contained, very small, localized conflict, but very, very violent with lots of snipers and that sort of thing in an urban environment. That's not so much the case in Artsakh. Mostly what we're seeing in Artsakh now is an indirect fire war. And so they're, both sides are shelling each other. Both sides are using aerial munitions, and you're seeing drones being used by Turkey and the Azeris against civilian areas. A lot of what undoubtedly qualify as war crimes happening in this conflict. And it's almost like, I don't want to sound one-sided in saying this, but I find it very cowardly when a military force uses indirect fire against civilians in order to get them to leave an area rather than having to go in and deal with those civilians in the area by actually taking it by force.
Right. So we do know that the Azeris and Turks are committing war crimes, and in that using illegal weaponry against civilians. What is the impact and implications of such weapons like cluster munitions and more recently white phosphorus?
I think the long-term impact is that you're never going to gain the support of the people. It's been proven over and over that terrorist activity against civilian populace ends up in the long run losing you the war. That's been shown throughout history. So that's a bad idea to begin with. When we say that these are illegal munitions, they're only illegal insofar as these international treaties, of which Azerbaijan and Armenia are not party to, neither is the United States in many cases. So they have been internationally condemned without a doubt, and they should be. Azerbaijan does not feel constrained by those legal constructs because they didn't sign on to them. So they feel that I guess they're justified in doing this, and it goes along with the objective that they have stated. I believe that if your enemy says that they plan to do something, you should take them at their word. If they have the inclination and the wherewithal to do it, that you should take them at their word. And that's exactly what Azerbaijan has done. They have stated their intention to not only take back the Nagorno-Karabakh region, but to wipe out the people that live there and repopulate it with their own people. That's something that Turkey is assisting them in. So they certainly, I mean, Turkey being the eighth largest military on the planet, they have the wherewithal to do it, and they certainly have the inclination. So I think that they should be taken seriously by the world community and condemned universally for the actions that they're taking.
With your background knowledge and then experience there in Artsakh, would you call this a genocide?
Genocide is attempting to wipe out an entire group of people. The president of Azerbaijan, the dictator there, has said that he would commit genocide and throw them out like dogs, against the people of Armenia. And he wasn't just talking about Artsakh, he was talking about Armenia proper. So he is a threat to Armenia. As I said, if he says that he has the inclination to do it, and he certainly has the wherewithal to do it, the only thing stopping him is the world body and the heart of the people of Armenia, which is I think sufficient, because Armenia being a very small country, very small military, but they have large support from their huge diaspora around the world. And that diaspora needs to come together now and needs to donate everything they can. When I was in Armenia, the thing that really struck me was that the entire country is on a war footing. This is not just the soldiers going off and fighting on the front lines. This is so close to the people of Armenia that the old women are going down to the International Opera House in Yerevan and are sewing camouflage nets for the troops, that people are gathering clothes and blankets and they're making mattresses in their art galleries and in their living rooms to give to the troops. Everybody wants to do something to support the troops. And indeed, when I spoke to the people who stayed in Artsakh, who stayed in Stepanakert, and asked them, why don't you flee? Why don't you go to Yerevan or someplace else? They said, because our men are on the front lines fighting. And how could we leave them when they need to come back here to get their laundry done, to get fed, to get medical support? And we need to be here for our men as they're on the front lines. The whole country is engaged in this. And I think the diaspora needs to be as well.
Yeah, I mean, being an Armenian growing up in the diaspora, I'm sure you noticed the essence of the Armenian spirit when you were there. We very much grew up as patriots and doing anything possible and impossible for our homeland, but I've never seen us so united. So definitely that is a very important aspect of that. And so what was an experience you had there that stands out the most?
You know, getting a chance to go and it's one thing to do the nickel tour of the places where bombs have fallen and to see the destruction. But that's kind of my job. And I see so much destruction that it doesn't really affect me just to see blown up buildings or destroyed houses or things like that. It doesn't affect me so much. But when I got a chance to go and join a family. This wasn't just a family. It was 12 people that were living in a cellar, in a bomb shelter in the basement of an apartment complex in Stepanakert. And many of them were strangers to each other. They just ended up there. And I spoke to one woman who came from a village called Toch, out maybe an hour and a half from Stepanakert. And she was there were only three people left in that village when Azerbaijan took it over. And she looked out her window and saw the Azeris murder her two neighbors by beheading one of them and shooting the other. And then she alone fled and made it back to Stepanakert. But she has no family. She has no children. She is the lone survivor. And she's sleeping on the floor of a cellar with 11 people that she's never met before now. But yet they all act like a family. And I got a chance to hear their stories and to see them weep and just say, I just want this to be over. I just want peace. I want my children to come home. That's really striking. And it gave me a chance to pray with them, to ask God's protection over them and the other people in Stepanakert. And I think that indeed God is protecting the people of Stepanakert in a miraculous way. I just spoke to one 83-year-old woman who was asleep on the second floor of her house in her bedroom when a missile just at random fell on her house and absolutely destroyed it. When we got there, her house, the place where her house had been, was now like a 10-foot smoking crater. And yet there was only one part of her house left standing. And it was her bedroom. And she survived unscathed. And looking at her house, it's hard to believe anybody could have walked out of that thing. But this 83-year-old woman did. And as I spoke to her about it, she just said it was a miracle. It was a miracle. That kind of faith, I think, is indicative to me of the strength of character of the Armenian people. And it kind of makes me jealous. I don't come from a culture like that, that's so full of faith, that has survived so much, that is surrounded by enemies who would like to see them destroyed, but yet after millennia, they're still there and they're still strong and they still love one another. That kind of camaraderie and esprit de corps is something that any military in the world would envy. And I think that it's very special to have gotten a chance to go there and be a part of it and see that and bring that news to the people of the world.
It's something else. Chuck Colton in Artsakh. I'm just you have to watch this. It is a video. It was from Horizon Armenian TV. I'll have a link on today's show notes. Please do watch it. It's worth watching the entire thing, the entire news, his expressions, his mannerism. And I'm just very thankful that there are people like this, people who are willing to share a story. But it also begs a question to us. What good did all of this story sharing do for us? And that's, I think, the bigger question that we need to ask, because I'm seeing analysis right and left. I'm seeing people writing about this, talking about it, sharing about it. And we did too, you know, we did prayer services. Last Saturday night, I was involved in a prayer service that I went out on a limb. I said, let's do a prayer service in Glendale, one of the largest concentration of Armenians outside of Armenia. Let's do a prayer service where it is only prayer service. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, in all of the services, you always get these politicians who come in and they come down and they give you their little advice and they're quick to leave before you can even offer a prayer, sort of like patting you on the back. And I said, instead of doing that, let's have a prayer service where we're actually praying. And it was beautiful. Saturday night, I'll have a link on today's show notes. I invite you to watch it. It's 1 hour. It took place at the Glendale Baptist Church, and along with us were clergy from the Methodist German Church, from Dignity, which is the Memorial Hospital. The chaplain was there. We had this lady from one of the evangelical churches, and we had a pastor from the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and of course from the Baptist Church, which was a host. And I was very honored because it was about prayer. And I thanked them. I had a chance to pray with them and share with them. Please watch this. Also, there was some beautiful renditions of Gomidas music done by non-Armenian artists who really picked up the Armenian feeling, the spirit of the music, and it's well worth it. But after all of this, after all of the social media hype and people talking about it, what good did it do us? That's the bigger question. And I think we need to answer that. Every year on April 24th, we get people lined up. We have huge marches, and inevitably, we always bring the Jewish rabbi or the guy from Jewish World Watch to stand there with us and say it's a horrible thing. And inevitably, we will hear the quote by Adolf Hitler, who, after all, today speaks of the annihilation of the Armenians. 1938, Adolf Hitler said this. And it's used because, of course, he masterminded the Jewish Holocaust. Every year we sit with people who have gone through these same tragedies, these atrocities, just as ours. And this year, I don't know if I could do that anymore. Not after what happened in Artsakh. Israel, the Jewish state, Israel, selling weapons of destruction to the Azeris to kill Armenians. As somebody said it so eloquently, the grandchildren of genocide perpetuators are killing grandchildren of genocide survivors with weapons supplied by children of Holocaust survivors. Wow. There you have it. So what are we doing telling the world? I mean, people spending so much time going out there. It's important to get the message out. I know for me, One of the reasons I, a couple weeks ago, what happened is I got into a mode where I had to be out there. And I was going from circuit to circuit. You could, you know, one of the things I like about Facebook, it's sort of like a diary. And so you kind of look at the last month, look at my Facebook posts of the last month. I mean, I'm speaking at universities, I'm speaking in different conferences, I'm speaking online, I'm speaking in person, I'm at different places posting things for non-Armenians, for Armenians. Well, what does it get us? What did it get us? We saw a resolution to the war being signed by Russia, Azerbaijan, and Armenia. And it, you know, in there it says that there will be Russian peacekeepers. And on top of it, there'll be Turks. Turkish. What, referees? What are they going to do? You know, it's like, what's that expression? Putting the fox in charge of the hen house? Putting the prisoner in charge of the prison? What are you guys talking about? You're putting mass murderers in charge of Armenia, or at least going to be observers, or going to be standing there, peacekeepers. How could you even, that's an oxymoron if I've ever heard one. Peacekeeper and the name Turks. Wild, huh? It just points to the injustice. It points to what's happening. And that's why I shared today's message with you today. Not as a lecture, but something that we need to start thinking about. It's not just about, let's wait until they attack us and then we'll have a strategy. No, it's being prepared. It's always being prepared. And that doesn't mean just military might. It doesn't mean just numbers. It means emotionally, physically, psychologically, all putting it together. Why do we go through the next step? Why is the Armenian Church so important to us? Why is the teaching of the Armenian Church so important to us? Why is the Holy Divine Liturgy so important to us? Because it's a holistic approach to life. It engages all of our senses. It engages the spirit and the body. And that's what you need to win a war. You can't just win it by physical. That's what happened to America. We were mighty against Vietnam. But the spirit was missing. That's why the Turk will never win. That's why I played for you this interview. Chuck Holton, who's not Armenian, and he goes there and he finds this beautiful value in the people. And that's something that we need to start cultivating. That's something that's been given to us by this beautiful pearl, as Jesus says, the merchant in search of a pearl. That for me is that pearl is the kingdom of heaven, which I find in the Armenian Church. And that is there for us. There's more, so much more that I want to say, but for today, let's leave it at this. It's a very emotional day today. I wanted to just share some ideas with you. I will be back right after Susie makes her announcement, and I'm going to share with you some upcoming events where you can plug into.
Susie here again, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. We are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world and look forward to your continued support. Thank you and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, and thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for making this podcast the popular podcast it is. I really, really appreciate it. And most of all, I thank you for your support, your love, and your prayers. They go a long way. Upcoming right now, our In Issues Ministries has a few things, especially for the holiday season and at the beginning of Advent in a couple weeks. And I just want to share those with you right away. Of course, Thanksgiving on November 26th this year. It's going to be difficult because of COVID virus. People are staying away from large gatherings and so on. And Thanksgiving is that family gathering time. What we're going to be doing is Thanksgiving morning, we're going to be launching balloons. What? Yeah, you know, you heard me right. We're going to be launching 1,000 balloons, which we have gotten permission to do in the city of Pasadena. And we're going to be launching them red, blue, and orange. And these balloons go up to the heavens. Each balloon will contain one or two names of the martyrs that were martyred during this time, as well as our prayers. We're sending our martyrs and our prayers to heaven in this very symbolic gesture, giving us an opportunity, all of us an opportunity, to reflect on the great sacrifice that they made. The balloons are available for a donation of $10 each. Most people are doing three, multiples of three, so that you can get the colors, 3, 6, 9, $10 each. And if we sell all 1,000 of these balloons, we have a matching fund. We have Circle of Faith, some wonderful people in our area who will match it dollar for dollar. So we have a potential of $20,000 for humanitarian aid in Artsakh. The diocese has designated humanitarian aid to be medicine, food, and shelter. These are the three areas that we need to assist. 90,000 people have been displaced because of this war, are crammed into living quarters in Armenia. We spoke with our daughter who's in Armenia, adopted daughter. This morning we talked to her. She's got 13 families living inside of her house. Horrible conditions, but filled with love. So in that sense, it's a beautiful conditions. Just think about that. These are ways that you can help. So the balloon project, that launches on November 26th. Again, the easiest way to make a contribution, drop me a line at feedback@epostle.net. I'll know that you're interested. And you can leave a donation at In His Shoes at our website, inhisshoes.org. There's a donate button. Just leave it. As long as you've sent us an email, we'll know that that's where the donation is going. Okay? That's one way that you can help immediately. During the Advent season, we kick off also with the toy drives. We have our In His Shoes Ministries targets the toy drives for children of domestic violence. This year, we are also adding children who are displaced because of war and the Christmas that they may have, just to get them toys. This is a strictly monetary. The one for domestic violence, you can make your donations via Amazon. And I'll have more information for you in the coming weeks. Amazon will deliver those toys for us to deliver to those children in this area. But the children in Armenia, we need monetary, financial donations. And here's how it's going to work. All the donations that we collect, we will purchase toys in Armenia. Double win-win. The first win is we don't have to pay for shipping. The second win is that we will be helping the Armenian economy and all of the kids that we can, as many kids as we can. We want to get them presents. They celebrate Galant, which is New Year's. So by January 1st, we want those toys to get there. And finally, we have the Children's Memorial. Every year we remember and recognize those children who have passed from among us. This is the Katya Hamparyan Children's Memorial. This year, we're going to add all of the children who died, yes, during the war. And I was thinking about this the other day, that we would add the children, never realizing, and Maria, Katya's mother, we were having a conversation, never realizing that it's so much more broad than that, because the people who were on the front line, they were children. What is an 18-year-old? What is a 19-year-old? What is a 17-year-old? For that matter, what is a 40-year-old or a 60-year-old? We're all children of somebody, right? but specifically young kids on the front line. So we are going to remember not only the children that have departed from us, but we're also going to be remembering the children who passed away during this war, who were martyred, who sacrificed themselves during this war. All of this will be available on our website and more information coming. But you, being the Next Step listeners, get the first debut of all the things that are coming together. I'm going to wrap it up for today. I want to thank you for joining us. And you can get more information at the mothership, inissues.org, as well as on social media. Probably the best thing is just follow any one of us and you'll see all kinds of stuff, okay? On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off-balance top minutes.